Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to episode 17 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox and Ben Arrington. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to The Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Ben Arrington, and I'm joined by...
Luke Condor with a K.
Oh.
Daniel Wilcox.
That was beautiful. It sounds great in the Bristolian accent as well.
I could have dialed the Bristolian a little bit more if I knew that was what you're into, but I wasn't sure.
Were you trying to get a bit more neutral?
I was trying to, but it's impossible. Almost. Yeah. It's impossible, my babber.
I like your accent, Ben. It's lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
I wish I had more of an accent. I think I've got a pretty nondescript accent now.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not, I don't know, queen speak, but neither is it, you know, slum chum. It's kind of in the middle.
When I go to Mansfield, I do pick up some more Mansfieldian style. Like I start calling like water and mam.
That's not a thing,
Dad.
Yeah, is that the
that's
number
not a thing
one?
Unless you're an angry Frenchman and you're asking for mal water. It's not
Gerard Depardieu. I just wanted to say his name.
Yeah,
for no real reason.
So today we are discussing. Well, we can't stop talking about Black Mirror. Like in every episode, I think we had to get in a bit of a Black Mirror section. So I think today we decided we're going to get it all out. We're going to pick at it until we're fully bled.
Pick at the scab,
yeah.
Until it's all horrible and under our fingernails.
Yeah. Lovely. It's the only way we'll heal. It's the only way we'll get over it.
Exactly. And there'll be a beautiful scar in the shape of a golden mirror.
Lovely.
Wow. Sounds to life.
So what have we been up to, I guess? It's pretty late on Sunday night. This is the latest we've ever done a podcast, I think.
Yeah.
I'm ready for bed, guys.
You guys.
Which
is
weird. The last time Ben was on, it was the earliest we've recorded one.
Yeah.
I'm just breaking records all over the place.
We should go even earlier next time.
Yeah, we should do like a 4 o'clock episode.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Should we do one like in the middle of the night? That'd be good.
Can we just whisper the entire thing?
It'd be like a sleepover party, but podcast. Sleepover podcast party.
You say whisper the entire thing, well, like an ASMR video. ASMR video.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Story Studio, the podcast for an independent publishing company.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, it makes me quite sleepy.
I thought it was going to be all right, but that creeped me out a little bit.
Yeah.
It gave me goosebumps, but not the good type.
Yeah.
Aww.
Ooh, like that.
It should remind me of an advert as well. I don't know what advert it is.
Marks and Spencer's?
Maybe.
This isn't any Parma ham. This is the luxurious, delicious, suck your fingertips Parma ham. Whatever that one.
Sounds delightful.
Have you, Dan, let me just guess what you've been up to. You've been editing some novel?
You are correct, yes. And I am tentatively saying that tomorrow will be the last day of edits, to which I'm quite excited. And then we can kind of crack on and get onto the third draft, which is... boy, just as exciting. but no, it's good because I think, as we've said before, the process we're doing at the minute, I think we get to a point where we bleed a story dry on an edit, on a plan, on the original write, and then by the time it comes to us being ridiculously bored and sort of, you know, pushing it away from the plate, we're ready just to swap and we can go back to the other story.
Oh, yeah. Feels so much fresher as well when you swap.
Yeah, yeah. And I've not read Lazarus since I first wrote it, which was a couple of months ago now. So a lot of it's been pushed out by They Remain.
It's quite different. It's a romantic comedy now.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I felt like it was missing that. Yeah. Maybe like a Swiss romantic comedy.
Erotica, sorry. It's full on erotic. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you need when you're writing a story about a 13-year-old boy.
oh my God.
It's a coming of age tale.
A
coming tale, you could say.
this got really dark.
Yeah, sorry.
Coming of age. I'm really excited to finish it. Like I was saying just before we were recording, I've got a couple more bits. So once I've got to the end, I'll go back and just quickly iron over and then. Yeah, it's looking in good shape. It's sitting comfortably at around 57,000 words. Yeah, and then we'll be moving on to the next thing. So I'm excited to get that pushing along.
Cool.
It's exciting. That sounds good.
What about you, Ben? Our El Marvo project is taking a nice jump forward.
Yeah, it has. It has indeed. It's been exciting seeing it all sort of like come to life.
Yeah.
A bit overwhelming as well, I think, because it looks great.
Yeah, so at the minute we're just putting to it like the pitch package together. So we're putting the five pages together, and we have had the five pretty much finished pages back from the artist. I think we're going to go over now. We've seen it out. We sort of can see where like the script needs a bit of tinkering, like the dialogue and the narration boxes.
I think that was to be expected, to be honest. I did kind of think a few bits might need tweaking. Yeah. A few bits might need adding as well, because I've noticed there's a few panels which look a bit naked.
Light. Yeah, a bit light, isn't it? Like I was reading some 2000 AD stuff, which I'll go into in my big whip. But like they're really dense, like, and I've kind of realized how light our script was compared to theirs. But it's all part of the process.
If we're thinking about it, on page one, we can do a hell of a lot.
Oh yeah,
we
can have loads of space. Yeah.
Again, it is quite sparse. Yeah, but I know what you mean, because stuff like Watchmen, when you go back to it, you realize just how much these absolutely huge blocks of text and, you know, all the dialogue, people are really, you know.
Yeah. I think I was worried because every time I've like seen advice, they've always said to don't go crazy with the dialogue and the text, because you can quickly overwhelm a reader and you can cover the art. But I think we maybe have been a bit too sparse.
Yeah, I think we've got a hell of a lot of room to play with now, which is going to be good. And then hopefully that'll give us a little bit of an idea of what to include in the future pages for the first issue. So but it's all a sort of like a learning curve, isn't it?
It does look fantastic as well. It's really exciting to actually, because I'm still kind of, I guess, bare to the idea that I don't know a lot of the cogs that are turning in the background. I only see sort of the artwork and the pages they drip, but it is looking pretty incredible already.
Yeah, and that headshot.
That front cover.
Oh, yeah, the front cover looks amazing, yeah. The headshot in there is pretty beautiful, I would say.
Oh, yeah. The addition of the sound effect kind of just took it to the next level, really, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's quite exciting because you've had like visual stuff made before, but this is the first time I've ever had comic ideas put down onto an actual panel-by-panel page. It's quite nice to see it.
Yeah, yeah. It is a good sort of like, it's exciting when you get that sort of like inbox, when you get the little notification on the inbox, you know, you've got an image to look at. It's like, hell yeah. Bring it on.
Have you showed it to anyone yet? Other than Hawk and Cleaver people?
No, I don't think I have. No, I haven't. Not yet.
I think I've showed it a bit to Kat. But,
a bit. Just flashed it. Like, there you go. That's all you get.
Yeah. But I don't know how she'll feel about the more brutal elements of it. she's not so much into that, but I am. So
it's my book.
Yeah.
There we go.
So I guess I've been doing the same thing as Ben there, and also been doing the same thing as Dan with the editing of the novel. I'm a little bit behind though. I'm at 55k, but I've got like another 15k to edit.
What round? Oh, did you say you're on round three of edits at the moment?
Round two.
Okay.
Yeah. And
So we've got Lazarus, and what's the title of the other one at the moment?
We're between two, I think. I don't think we've quite decided, have we, Dan?
No, not yet. I'm just going for They Remain as a working title.
Okay. In my head, it's They Rot, but I'm good either way, really.
They Remot.
They Remot.
Yeah. They Remot.
They Rotain.
Which one are you leaning towards, Ben?
And Remain. I quite like They Rot. But then again, I don't know too much about the story, so yeah. I guess that's just literally going on the word alone. Because I think, as I mentioned last time, They Remain just sounds like a EU referendum, post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah,
They Remain.
The Rot is kind of the overarching link and will be between books. It is just, I guess, how we feel the vibe is from the first book. I mean, it could be They Rot and then a subtitle sort of that describes it, but. I guess I'll just grab your opinion when you've sort of read through what I've done to see how you feel with it, because it is, the Rot is in there. It's just not half as heavy as it was.
Yeah.
So
can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you two had any like major disagreements regarding this stuff so far, seeing as the process you're writing?
I don't think so.
Oh, for God's sake. But, I was hoping for like a little bit of drama, a little bit of insight.
A little bit of the way you guys work.
No. I think we're both pretty relaxed.
He wants numbers and I wanted Roman numerals and I was all very mad.
I think we're fairly relaxed anyway. Neither of us are ego maniacs.
Neither of you have like removed something that someone was really precious about then?
Thing is, because we're swapping novels every time we go to the next section, you kind of just forget about the other novel for a while because you're so focused on the one you're working on. And by the time we swap back, I would have forgotten the bits I would have been more precious about.
So what you're saying is someone could have secretly got rid of something you're precious about, but you just...
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think I'm precious about much of anything of it at the minute.
No, I think because we were very accepting that, especially with the first draft anyway, it is just throwing up on paper and hoping that something good comes out. But we said when we swapped over, like, at the end of the day, nothing's precious. Do what you feel, because you're almost coming back as a reader into that story, because you've seen the beats but you've not seen the actual story come together. So I kind of, if you as a reader, as you're going through, feel like, hold on, that's a bit crap or that needs a bit more work, then I feel like, you know, who's better in the seat to adjust it than the person reading it?
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah,
that's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, guys, because I was worried.
Yeah,
don't want you guys falling out, you know.
I know we've got a long journey to go yet, and it might be when it comes to books 2 and 3, we might want very different things.
Maybe the sticker's going to be the title. You're going to come to blows over the title.
Yeah,
I hope.
I think I would cave quicker. So whichever one you want to go with, Dan, really. But,
Dan is pushy.
I'm awful. You've come up with all the titles so far anyway, so you seem to have a better head for...
Thanks.
Like, Lazarus was your idea.
I've had no complaints with my head.
No, it's a beautiful one.
should we tell people... should we tell people, like, how many books we're planning on doing in these for next year? Or is that too soon?
No, let's do it. Let's be ambitious.
So we want to release these books and a total of 6 books next year. So 3 in each universe.
Wow. Jesus.
And potentially that'll close one of them anyway, because so far I'm thinking one of them will be a trilogy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Which one are you thinking? I don't think we discussed it, but I think
we did. Lazarus.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So Lazarus, it feels more like a trilogy anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, actually, because I was thinking about this today. So I've been listening, and I said this in one of my previous big whoops, been listening a lot to the Hamilton soundtrack. Been learning a lot about the American Revolution, which features quite heavily in the beginning of that book. And now when I go back to it, I'm thinking maybe there'll be some bits that I want to sort of colour it with.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I did a shocking amount of research, really.
Did you watch that YouTube video I sent you?
Yeah, that was kind of it. that was the extent of my research. Like, there are red coats and there are blue coats. Confederates, people, yeah, them.
Yeah, I had to Google some things. I had no idea about the Civil War. Right,
Wikipedia.
It was Wikipedia. should we go on to our big whoops for the week?
What a big whoop!
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Has anyone got one?
I've got one.
Okay, cool.
I've got one. Okay, I didn't think of one, and now I've suddenly thought of one. I've started watching a TV show on Netflix. I think it's like 7 parts. It's called Top of the Lake. I don't know if you guys heard of this. You heard of this? Confused faces. I was recommended it probably about a year ago by a work colleague, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I was a bit like feeling a bit lazy, didn't really want to hunt it down too much. And suddenly, bang, appears on Netflix. It's like a crime thriller sort of drama set in. I'm pretty sure set in New Zealand, although I've only seen 3 episodes, and no one's actually said where they are. I keep going, just say. I'm literally going by accents, so I'm pretty sure it's New Zealand.
Yeah. Is it important to know?
What's the countryside like? Is it?
Well, there's like, exactly. It's very New Zealand. I was still confused. There's like a Maori guy who like turns up as well. So I was like, right, okay, it's definitely New Zealand, but still not confirmed 100%. My New Zealand accents, I'm literally going by Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So I was like, do these guys sound like Flight of the Conchords? Basically, it stars Elizabeth Moss, who was in Mad Men, if you remember.
I've not seen any Mad Men.
I've seen a little bit of Mad Men. I think she was like a secretary to John Hamm's character, possibly.
Mm. She the redhead.
No, that's Christina Hendricks, isn't it? Maybe all right. So if she was the receptionist, Elizabeth Moss was someone else. Okay. Quite a petite lady with like a bob haircut, maybe. Basically, okay. it's like a crime thriller where she is a police detective in sort of like rural New Zealand. Everywhere's rural, is it not? And it's a story of a girl who like attempts suicide and then goes missing. She's 12 and she's pregnant. So basically just starts unraveling all this really dark, sort of like crazy, horrible sort of stuff. I can't really go into it too much without sort of spoiling it. But yeah, it's about trying to hunt down this girl and then encountering all these different characters along the way. And it's just this really, really well written. And this sort of draws you right in. Like I probably watched about 10 minutes and I was already like hooked.
Is it quite like a dark thing? Is it like there's that other Netflix mystery killer thing set in the US? Is it dark?
Yeah, it's pretty dark. It's pretty dark. But I think there's some really interesting characters. Like there's a dude in it. I don't know if you've ever seen the Paddy Considine film Tyrannosaur.
No, but I really want to watch that as well. Is it the same guy or
the old dude, the old Scottish dude, is like the main character in that. Is in this as like a sort of bit, a pretty nasty dude. So he's a pretty good character. Holly Hunter's in it as well, as sort of like a leader of, I want to say a cult, but it's almost like a women's refuge type thing. Women's refuge / cult. It gets involved in sort of what, but it's just sort of really sort of like interweaving like narratives and like really all really well written characters. And just I recommend it. It's
cool.
Good.
I'll check it out. I've just got my Netflix thing back up, and the price has gone up to
£7.49. Yeah,
that's a horrible. That must have been a shock for you, Luke. Are you all right?
I'm okay. I'll get over it, I think. Yeah,
just one less coffee a month.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good, man. I'll check it out. I think. We need new series to watch. So
it's a few years old, but I think they've confirmed that there's going to be a follow up, which I think comes out next year. But yeah, it's only like, as I said, it's only like seven hour long episodes.
Cool.
So,
What about
my my big whoop is actually two trailers released yesterday. One for The Last of Us 2, which I'm not sure how I feel about it, because The Last of Us 1 was such a well-rounded game in every aspect, and it kind of blew most of the games that I've played before out of the water in terms of the story was phenomenal, the gameplay was ace, the concepts kind of lent a new lease of life to an otherwise saturated zombie genre. And just did a fantastic job, and it kind of felt like it didn't need a part two.
Is it just because it's the same characters? Like, would you have preferred a new set of characters and a new story set in the same world?
No, I think having the characters in it again is good, because you really connect with Joel and Ellie, and it's their relationship that you kind of grow accustomed to and learn to love. I don't know what it is. Like, I played the DLC was good. Maybe a bit too short, but it was good. But yeah, I think I'm excited at because I'm excited because I trust them because they've done a fantastic job with the first one because Naughty Dog did a fantastic job with Uncharted series in general. They're good. They're fantastic storytellers. So I trust them to do well. I just don't know if we needed the second.
Arguably, would you say that the sequel to Uncharted was much better than the first one? It was, wasn't it, really? Do you think?
Which one?
The sequel to Uncharted, so Uncharted 2, was better than the original, do you think?
Yeah, yeah, they each got better each time. So yeah, I have faith that they'll do a good job. It's just I felt like, you know, that was a box put to the side, but no, it'll be interesting to see. And then the second trailer was for Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh yeah.
Which have you guys seen it yet?
Yeah, yeah, it looks fun.
There's something about mixing 70s and 80s power rock with sci-fi space battles that just gets your blood going around your body.
Groot. They've got the callback scene where Baby Groot's on Rocket Raccoon's shoulder.
It looks
really fun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
loads of good bits of Drax in the in the trailer as well, isn't it?
It just looks like it's gonna be another fantastic story. It's one of those that I don't know. I think I like Guardians because it's fun, and it's not even like I want to say, oh, it's just, you know, an average film. But in terms of like the effects and everything, it's just a fantastic film, and it's so different to the other stuff that Marvel is bringing out.
Yeah,
that it's quite refreshing. It's almost like sort of splashing your face with water after you've watched the others.
You know what I love the most about Guardians of the Galaxy series is when you watch Star Wars and like other sci-fi space war films, like the skies are always kind of like the two-tone. So you've got the black and the white stars, but Guardians of the Galaxy, like every like scene of space is like a beautiful watercolor nebula painting. It's just every scene is beautiful. And I always think about the scene where in the first film where Peter's about to kiss Gamora, I can't remember what song's playing, but and then you've got like a beautiful nebula in the background. I just thought it was a really pretty, really nice scene.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's the dialogue as well. The script is just fantastic. It's just it's funny. It's witty. It does what it needs to do. There's not really. I don't think there was a point in Guardians 1 where I was like, I felt I was getting a bit bored. It was just constantly up and down in the right ways. And
how do you think they're going to implement these characters in like Infinity War?
That will be interesting.
If that's what's going to happen, that is going to be interesting.
But I think you've also got in sort of Civil War and all the others, you've got that element of fun in there anyway. And they seem to, as is the each film comes out, they seem to be adding that comedy almost to kind of match it. So I think
there's just going to be so much wit jostling for space. We're going to have Tony Stark, we're going to have Spider-Man, we're going to have Doctor Strange, we're going to have all of the Guardians of the Galaxy characters. We're going to have Thor. We're going to have Hulk. It's just going to be
Spider-Man.
Well, assuming this is what's going to happen. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's going to be, you know what I mean? It's going to be crazy.
Your eyes are going to pop out and your lungs are going to bleed from laughing. It's just too much.
That sounds like fun.
Also, James Gunn's just put another trailer out for the Belko experiment, which I'm really looking forward to. Have you seen it, Dan?
I haven't.
So, I think he wrote the film like years ago, but he'd never get it
made. Is he not writer and producer on it? He didn't direct it, did he?
He didn't direct this one, no. The director is the guy who directed Wolf Creek. I don't know if it's the film or the TV show. But so the idea is that they're in an office, some new age, nice looking modern office. And then the doors like lock and there's a voice that says you need to kill someone in the office within so much time, and if you don't, will kill someone. So it's got like a battle royale sort of feel to it, but set in an office with like a, it's a bit like Office Space meets battle royale.
Okay.
Yeah, but it looks really cool. But James Gunn is a good writer. He's a very, I think I've liked most, like Sliver was a really good script. I think that was really funny. If you ever saw that.
Haven't.
Yeah. Sliver was good. I didn't really know James Gunn was involved in that for a long time.
Yeah, and Super, really dark, like quite a funny film. Yeah, he's a good guy. I really like James Gunn.
Yeah, I like him as well. He seems to have a good sort of like track record so far.
Yeah. So my big go on.
Yeah, go.
So as you know, I've been writing some Future Shocks, which are like the 2000 AD like, it's the way to become a writer for 2008. You have to like prove your mettle by writing these short stories for them. And eventually, after you publish so many, they give you like, they let you pitch on series and they let you do bigger stuff. So I've got this book. It's called The Best of Future Shocks. And it's, it's just a shitload of these short stories in black and white. A lot of them are really old. So like from the 80s, 70s, 80s. So it's Grant Morrison stories, Neil Gaiman stories. And these are stories they wrote before they were big, like before they were like massive names. Like Neil Gaiman's like almost a household name, I think now. Yeah. Mm. But the story, like, they're kind of cheesy in a way. Like, it's very much like that sort of old school 70s view of science fiction. So, and there are kind of like, so there's like one story where I think it's one of Peter Milligan's stories. So it's about, there was a bomb that went off on Earth and there was loads of destruction, so it had to go underground. And then you think it's been told from the perspective of a human. And then they say, now we're finally ready to come back out to the ground. And then the last panel is like a mole coming out of a hill, like a hole in the ground. It's just loads of little things like that. They're quite silly, quite stupid. Some of them, I would say, it's quite inspiring to see, like Neil Gaiman's story. Some of them just aren't, they're good, but they're not great. I mean, but it's inspiring to see because like, you saw where he sort of came from. Mm. So it's really nice to see. And again, like seeing how much, like if you look at this, like how much like text, I don't know if you can see. Compared to like our El Marvo script so far, like there's so much text going on there. But it's good to see. And it's given me some ideas of how I'm going to do some of the future submissions. I don't know how far my submission will get this first one I sent off, but I know how I can do better ones next time.
That's the key.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Black Mirror. We should probably say this is going to be a spoilerific episode.
Spoilers coming at you.
Yeah, there's no holding back.
Would you guys...
Are you taking your top off to get ready? Like, yeah, let's get into this.
Right. Would you guys say this is your favourite season?
It's the only one I've watched, so yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think in previous seasons it was kind of like... not. I wouldn't say hit and miss, but I would say they were sort of like two or three... Well, actually, I can't even remember how many episodes were previous series.
There's three episodes in each season.
Oh, right, not two or three then. I mean, like one. One would sort of like jump out at you as being as being like the best or the one you talk about the most. Whereas I think with this one, every single episode kind of was pretty amazing in its own right.
Yeah.
And pretty memorable. Like I wouldn't necessarily pick one out in this series that I'd say wasn't so good. I think they were all pretty awesome.
I think they were pretty awesome. I think there's one that's lacking a bit for myself anyway. I guess we'll find out which one it is. I've got like each episode written down. Should we just go through one by one and just see where we...
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Let's do it.
So the first episode is the one called Nosedive, which I didn't realise, but Rashida Jones co-wrote it.
Really?
All right.
Sort of a bit left field. So the idea is...
Who did she co-write it with, sorry? Was it
Charlie Brooker and someone else?
Oh, yeah. All right, okay.
Lacey Pound lives in a world where both friends and strangers can rate your popularity out of 5 stars. Due to technology inside phones and standard smart lenses that display everyone's name and current rating, not only does this technology affect day-to-day lifestyle, but also affect social standing. And then it sort of takes this very pleasant, nice woman... and it's sort of a destruction of a character tale. Like we see a downfall. Would you say best favorite episode, least favorite episode? Whereabouts would you guys rate it?
I think after I saw it, I was kind of like, oh, that was amazing. But I think once I saw the others, it probably ranked probably quite low for me. But that, again, that's just in comparison to some amazing episodes. Just because I think the sort of the dark route that it took wasn't, you know, it wasn't that dark, really, was it?
It was a weird one to start with. I probably would have picked a different episode to start.
This was probably the first one where you could really tell how much money was going into this series.
Yeah.
Because, everything, they obviously had quite a large budget. Obviously, not just having Bryce Dallas Howard involved, but just everything looked so clean. Some of the sets, yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know how much of it was CGI, but
that was one of the things that stood out for me. Yeah, the quality of the actual entire episode is just sort of crystal clear. And I don't know if that's something, like you say, that they did digitally, or whether that's they found those places. But most of the other episodes, they seem to be set in darker locations or darker things happen, whereas this one, you've got sort of the blue skies, you've got the sort of suburban paradise. It's
I always thought of Black Mirror as well as being sort of quite a British thing. I felt like all the stories were kind of set in the UK, and this was probably the first one where it wasn't.
I think it almost had like a bit of a
Hollywood sheen, like
they picked this one to like ease the American audiences into the world? Because it's not the darkest. It's not what I would say is a standard Black Mirror episode in terms of how dark they get.
If they did, then the second one would be in stark contrast. If you watch that first one and then go, "Oh, this is good," I might watch the second Black Mirror. Yeah. You will peel your eyes out.
But like, it's more American. It's a bit more Hollywood, like Ben said. Like the sheen's there, and
maybe
it's sort
because
of
the session.
On...
No, no, you go on, man. Sorry.
I was going to say it sort of ends on a happy note. I mean, it's kind of,
in a way, yeah,
kind of terrible, but it's still positive.
It's wholesome. I just think the entire premise of the episode, it's just smart, because you can definitely see the world taking that direction where everything that you do is rated, and it's such an easy incentive to give people to go, you know, you have to work your way up in stars and be a good citizen, otherwise you can't have the things that you want.
Yeah.
And the idea of that is just, it's one of those terrifying things where, I think with all of them, where it's so close to what could be reality that it kind of, you watch it and go, ha, this is entertaining, but also it plays in the back of your mind.
Yeah,
it's sort of like all of the Black Mirror episodes are kind of, they feel quite near future, don't they? They feel like, you know, no less than like a decade away, really. And I think because social media and the way sort of how far it's come in the last few years, a lot is so relatable, especially it's like rating people out of, you know, the 5-star things and how people like to present themselves socially and stuff. It was definitely a very interesting episode.
So you could pretty much tell what was going to happen quite early in the episode. Like you pretty much said it was going to be a story about this woman sort of falling down the star system. Like why do we like to see that? What is it about us that like to watch people fail?
I don't know. I think it's when people are sort of like striving to sort of present themselves as something that are kind of not. It's almost like a bit of a, it's quite fake, and I guess it's almost like I don't know, sort of presenting themselves as something they're not. So to see her to finally take that sort of fall was quite satisfying, I guess.
I think it's relatable as well to just in terms of actual modern day things where, you know, people do get obsessed with the whole popularity thing, even if it's not a star system, but people will, you know, have thousands of followers on Instagram, on Facebook, on Snapchat. They'll spend most of their time of their day doing these things to make these people they've never met like them in some way, or to validate themselves. And to watch a woman go from like a 4.2 down and just down and down and down to practically a zero and almost be free of that fake, like it's not even a real oppression. It's a fake oppression that they put on themselves that's quite close to home, because there are a lot of people out there who really don't need to post pictures of themselves. They get nothing from it. So, yeah.
I think you said, Dan, like, it's not an original idea, because, I mean, Meow Meow Beans in Community did the exact same thing.
Meow Meow.
But maybe not as dark or as real. But
They had a shorter time frame to do it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good episode. The ending was because a lot of like in the previous seasons of Black Mirror, there's normally like a big cathartic speech where like one of the characters will just like, they'll pretty much be possessed by Charlie Brooker for like 2 minutes and they'll just sort of rant and rant and rant. And I thought this was a good one, but it wasn't quite up there with some of the rants from season 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. But it was good. I enjoyed it.
How many stars would you rate this exchange we're having right now?
5 out of 5, mate, of course.
One.
I'll give you 4. Oh, one.
Yeah. Yeah, you can actually rate yourself for anyone interested. If you go on like rate.me.com or something, there's actually there's an engine that I don't know if it actually does. It says it scans your social media profile and give you what your social rating would be through that system. So I think I did it with them because I've got like an alias online for games and stuff. And then I've also got my name. And I think my name got like a 3.4 and my alias got a 4.4.
Nice.
That's pretty good there.
Yeah.
Mm. And so they should actually rate each other who have given it a go. And I don't know if it affects it, but.
Some of the marketing
find out what it is
pretty cool. I can't remember. I did it as well. I think I got 3.4 or something.
Is it called rate.me or share.me? Or
yeah, something like that, yeah.
It's gone, rate. I think. Yeah. It says no longer available.
Ah. Yeah. Oh. Is that the people are taking it to heart?
Yeah, it must be.
I'm going to find it.
There we go.
You found it?
No, I haven't. I think it's just gone now. Maybe it was actually a real system and people were like, shit, this shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah. I've just Googled it and apparently there is actually going to be like a, not like a marketing app, but there is going to be one called People, P-E-E-P-L-E, which is going to be a similar thing. It's Yelp for humans.
Oh. I think because I've seen sort of lowbrow things on where people just put up websites where people basically just rate people they've had sex with and put it online. That's like a genuine thing.
Have you ever been on ratemypoo.com?
I have.
I think every English person who went through like secondary school has been on ratemypoo.com. It's just one of those websites that you just send people on.
It opened my eyes to a whole new degree of feces.
There's quite a few rate my websites as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won't go into them.
But yeah, when you compare the first episode to the second one, because I watch, my partner's quite squeamish with horror stuff.
Mm.
And I watched that first episode, and when I finished watching it, I was like, actually, Black Mirror's not that, because I came into the season three just new. And I was like, actually, it's not that bad. It's got, there was nothing scary in it, really.
Yeah.
And then I was actually very thankful that I watched the second episode when she wasn't home, because the whole idea of, just in general, the whole idea of augmented reality, but then the sort of direction it leads at the end is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So
some nice American audiences have watched episode one and go, this is pretty good. It's quite nice, actually. It's not bad. Then I go on to episode two, which is called Playtest. Which is my, I just love this episode. I just absolutely love it. So the idea is the little synopsis says, Cooper, a man who lives with his mother, leaves home to travel the world. He keeps ignoring his mother's calls, which is important. Feeling unable to connect to her following his father developing early onset Alzheimer's and dying. So he's in London shortly before he's trying to get home. He needs some money. He could just accept the call from his mum, but decides to take one of these jobs off this website and ends up becoming a game tester. And it sort of goes crazy from there.
But, a lovely job.
Yeah. This is, I don't know, I just love this episode. Like, I think there's something so horrific about the idea of something being, it's got that body horror element. So there's something inside your body that's using your own fears against you. It's for me, it just creeps me out completely.
Yeah.
It's messed up. This is what got me the most messed up one, right?
And it's, again, it's not too far off what is already happening, because there's a new game coming out, isn't it? I can't remember what, and it is a VR game that it uses your habits and the way that you play against you. So if you're like a person that is slow and walks up to places really quietly because you're scared, it starts to understand that and leaps out at you. But conversely, if you run into things, it will find places to hide. And we'll use that against you to scare you.
Yeah.
So that is like a genuine thing that's happening. And then, yeah, the idea of, well, when it first starts and he goes into that room and he's playing with that gopher, I just thought that was freaking awesome. It's just playing whack-a-mole with an actual real gopher. And when they're actually scaling up the level of detail.
Yeah.
And it's
perfect. Like, I like horror films and horror games and stuff, but there are some games that I just find extremely terrifying. And if you mix that in with like VR, which we're getting now, I know like they're saying in VR testing, they're having to make some games less scary because they're truly like, and like army games less real because they're going to give people PTSD. Like, and if you imagine like this whole idea of you being in the house, and it looks like there's things actually there. But yeah, it's just I can't get over this episode.
I think it's the part where like he handles it well to begin with, and you can see him going, "Ah, you're fake," and he's touching, he's putting his hand through it.
Yeah.
But then it is that part where you start going, like, what is actually real? Which and it does trick you into questioning how far it's gone.
This episode wouldn't be half as good if the actor wasn't as convincing as he is. When he's like truly terrified, you are completely with him.
Yeah.
Is the actor Kurt Russell's son? I heard someone say that.
Really?
That's true.
Yeah, well, his name's Wyatt Russell, so...
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Sure it is Kurt Russell's son. He's pretty convincing, because he did the sort of, like, relatable, fun-loving guy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Sort of quite well,
yeah.
And then when he genuinely started getting freaked out, you were like, "Oh Jesus Christ!"
Yeah,
because there are a few bits, especially when the girl that he'd sort of slept with, sort of comes into the house. You're kind of with him. You're like, "Where's she come from? What's she doing here? Like, what the hell? What the hell's going on?" And then she tries to kill him. You're like, "Oh Jesus!"
Yeah, that bit where she forces him down onto the knife, went through me pretty bad.
I think especially because they're saying you shouldn't be able to feel it. And he's like, well, I fucking can. It's because you do start going in experiments like that. How far will it go? Because, I mean, essentially it could. If it can make you see things, why wouldn't it be able to make you feel things? And then at that point, without ripping it out, how far into your system does it go? It's
so Kevin Kelly, who's like a futurist, who was the editor of Wired magazine. He said, in the future, we'll go to a point. At the minute, we're in an internet of information, so we've got instant access to any information we need. But in the future, with VR and maybe AR at some point, we'll be in an internet of experience. He says it's very easy to trick your body into feeling things that you're seeing and experiencing. My friend Dom, he works in like VR stuff, and he said he was doing a VR test where he had a photorealistic room that he was walking around in, and he reached out and took something, and he accidentally took something in a physical room at the same time. And it said it felt so real to him at that moment. It felt like he was actually inside that world. And it's easy to trick your body into believing you're actually there. So if you're making horror games with the zombies and Resident Evil AR, whatever it would be, like, I just wouldn't want to play it. I don't think it would kill me. Like, people would get heart attacks and stuff.
Yeah, I played the Sony VR, the PlayStation 1, and there's just a demo thing where you're on a luge going down the street and you're sort of racing about. And I'm sat on the chair in this guy's living room just with this VR headset on. And just without thinking, I found myself just starting to recline and just straighten my body. And then as you kind of go down and lift over a jump, your belly goes with it. Yeah. You're literally not moving, but your belly does that whole like, and it's just the weirdest thing to feel that, knowing that you're still.
Your mind is quite powerful. I could have done with another half an hour of in the house, like building up to the ending. I think it kind of ramped that tension up a bit more.
maybe even less at the beginning.
I think they needed all that stuff though, because
there was a lot of montage for travel though.
Yeah.
It kind of like unraveled quite quickly, I think. You kind of like got in there, and it rather than being given time to sort of like amp up the tension, it kind of like went bang, 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 and then sort of unraveled quite quickly. So
yeah,
it did feel a little bit insane.
Yeah. So there's like three endings, I think, from if memory serves. So the first ending is where his mind starts to wipe itself or something. So he starts forgetting who he is. I found that ending absolutely terrible. That was the worst ending for me. The way the game design is just like, sorry, like he just apologizes so nonchalantly, like as if it's just someone had a bad experience playing the game. He's ruining his life, but yeah. And then the real ending, I think this is like perfect Charlie Brooker. So the idea of like the emotional ending of he should have just called his mum back, or should have just answered the phone, because it's the phone interference that ruins the upload of the AR system or whatever. So the idea that it's quite poetic in the sense that he should have just answered it, should have just called his mum back. But it's also kind of like it's got that Charlie Brooker black humor of it's just phone interference that's the reason like he had this horrible death, basically.
Yeah, that lasted like 0.01 seconds.
yeah.
But you watch this entire half of that, well, 40, no, an hour episode, but he's probably in the house for like half an hour. And you just go, oh, so none of that was a thing.
What did everybody think of the crazy faced, human faced spider dude?
It's cool. I like that it didn't quite look real. Like, but then when the woman came in, it made her feel a lot more real. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool because you knew that something was going to come. But then it was also that part where I found it quite funny that it will jump out and then just be there. So you have that initial scare and then it's just like, oh,
yeah,
wave.
Spider face dude looked, it reminded me of someone out of Dead Space.
Yeah.
I was a bit like, oh god, it's creepy.
Yeah.
Imagine a VR version of Dead Space.
So
in terms of like a story arc, it was just beautiful.
Yeah. A bit longer I would have liked, but you know, can't get everything we want. But so for me, that episode's on top so far, and then nosedives after that. So the third episode was Shut Up and Dance, which is another amazing episode. This is one of the most sort of horrific ones for me, in a sense. So Kenny, a teenager, needs to install a malware remover on his laptop.
Oh, Jesus.
After his sister had borrowed it without permission to illegally stream movies. An unseen hacker gains access to his laptop's webcam and records Kenny doing his thing in front of his computer. And then they use that footage of him fiddling as a blackmail to get him to do whatever they want. And then it spirals out from there, really. How are you guys feeling about this episode?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. As I said, it was definitely one of the darkest sort of episodes, and it was a couple of the twists I guess I didn't really see coming. I mean, you could kind of, they were quite obvious, I guess, but I just think
which twist did you see? Because the main twist to me was when you find out that he himself
was watching kiddie porn.
Yeah.
Like that was it. I didn't see that one. I didn't see that one coming, really, at all. But I kind of thought whatever he does, he's going to be revealed by this sort of unknown force, this blackmailing him. I thought whatever he does, this is just going to be plastered everywhere anyway.
Yeah.
And then it was. But also the dude who was played by
Bron from
Bron. Yeah.
Bron.
Game of Thrones, yeah.
One of Robson and Jerome.
Yeah.
I don't, which one is he? Jerome. Yeah, I thought his character was quite good because he was kind of like quite refreshing. He was almost like he was just like the straight guy and everything. He was just like saying what everyone was thinking, I guess, which was,
yeah.
I think it's bullshit.
It's good. I think it just shows you like that there's like a single mystery throughout the entire episode that just keeps you like, who are these people? That's like the main question that like just keeps you watching and keeps you intrigued throughout the entire thing. I don't know, the ending, like, you know, where they sort of, it's a troll face and they're just going to troll everyone. I don't know if I needed all that extra stuff with all the other people. It seemed kind of tacked on a bit. I think they probably just should have just focused completely on this kid.
Yeah. So I had a very weird experience with this episode because it happened to be my partner was out. Her mother was staying over. And I was like, do you like interesting things to watch? And so I ended up watching this episode with my partner's mother, who she's not squeamish. she's not squeamish or anything. She's just kind of, she's quite, you know, straight-laced and open-minded. And obviously it starts off with this child just wanking at a laptop.
yeah, like normally like working, when sex scenes come on TV and your parents in the room, it's kind of awkward. But that must be like...
Just sat across the sofa.
Did she look over
it's
in season?
Not always.
it's not always like this.
But it's like it I was
she,
going. I was,
did she look over and see some tape on your webcam and go?
No, because I basically I told her about the first episode. She was like, "Oh, that sounds pretty interesting." I told her about the second one, and I was like, "This one will probably be a bit flatter, not so gory." But it was one of those things as we were watching it, where even she was saying that. This stuff is very much real. This is very much like there's no reason that a hacker couldn't do this, and how easy it would be right now. And the guy that played the kid did. Out of sort of performances of the year, I'd give it to him because he portrayed that phenomenally well. And you think in your head, you know, if you're, I don't know how old he was, 14, 15, 16. And the minute, and like a grown up or this unseen force is going, we've got you wanking on cam, you don't want mummy to find out. There is no end to what they do, and it really isn't. And everything in that is just, I said it on the previous ones as well, but everything in that is just believable, but like now.
Yeah, it's not even near future, is it? That, I'm sure no. That probably, in fact, I think I read somewhere that kind of thing does happen.
I read a story of that recently,
actually.
Yeah, I don't know how extreme those cases are, but I remember watching the part where he's in the bank and he's holding them up at gunpoint and he just starts pissing himself. Yeah. And at that moment, you just go, you are going to be a phenomenal actor because you feel so, so sorry for him in that moment.
I think he's quite well. I saw
real, did he?
He's a method actor, I believe. So
he just pissed himself for real.
One of the big websites, IGN or something, said that he was the best thing of 2016. So he think he's been all right out of it. He's obviously a very talented actor. The only thing I didn't like, or didn't make sense to me, was that he won the fight. Like, you know, the fight.
Yeah, I was confused by that.
Because the other guy was like, unless he had a knife on him or something, like.
That's why they didn't show it, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think he should have got a smaller guy.
I reckon he would have played dirty. I reckon he would have, like, bit and scratched and maybe, like, slammed his head on a rock or something and then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remember finishing that episode, and obviously, in terms of a satisfying ending, I feel like that's the most unsatisfied I've been. And I sat there when the episode ended and the credits rolled, just turned around to my partner's mum, and we both looked at each other and went, like, what is life? There's clearly no hope.
He's a bloody nonce, isn't he? He's a nonce after all of that.
So, he's been fiddling at kiddies.
I feel like the journey of the season is like, I can see what they've done now, because it starts off fairly light, it goes a lot darker. This is probably one of the darkest episodes because of the theme and the material, should we say.
I did read something similar actually quite recently, that people get chatting to people on like dating websites, get them to Skype with somebody they assume is going to be a lovely lady, ask them to do sort of like stuff, on the webcam, and then they say, like, oh, we've got this footage now. Basically, we'll send it all to all of your friends and family on Facebook unless you transfer like 500 quid right now.
That's actually
people,
on them.
Suicide.
Do you guys watch I'm a Celebrity?
No.
No, so that's not the minute. And basically,
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, the only reason I bring that up is one of the guys on that at the minute is a stand-up comedian who, quite early on in the series, that happened to him. And he told this story and basically said that he was catfished about 5 years ago, and it was only last year that they put his video online, and now his dick is just everywhere on the internet.
His dick is everywhere on the internet.
His dick is just everywhere.
Is that his new tagline on his website? Yeah. What's his name?
Joel someone.
Joel,
I don't know what
someone. Yeah.
His... Joel someone. My dick is everywhere.
He should lean into that and make that his career, I guess.
Pop on his dick.
I work in tech support, and there's a lot of people who bring in laptops with like tape and stuff on their web cameras. So I always look at him like, I know why you're trying to like cover your privacy. I know.
Did even remove it before they bring it in?
No, it's worse as well because I've seen some people like blue tack on it, and it's like gone into the camera, like, gone behind the glass. So it's like basically broke the camera.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So I mean, just don't. I mean, do what you need to do.
But bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. So then we get like episode 4 is quite a nice episode. It's actually the only truly nice episode. San Junipero. So it says here, the year is 1987 and the setting is the scenic California beach resort town of San Junipero. A shy young woman, Yorkie, is visiting San Junipero for the first time and she heads to a crowded local bar called Tucker's. One of the first people she notices is Kelly, a vivacious party girl. And then, I mean, this is a slow episode in the sense that it's like a very slow building romance and then they fall out and then they come together in the end. It's not like any other Black Mirror episode.
It's also the only one that I'd say I can't see happening.
What, like the technology?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it will. Like, not.
I guess something similar. The only bit I was confused by. Right. Let's not. But initially, what did you guys think? Did you guys think it was time travel? Did you think augmented reality?
I thought augmented reality. And I thought it was like a game or something that people were playing. I didn't realize they were basically ghosts of people that were living there.
Mm. Yeah.
I got confused because it had that part where she goes into another bar and suddenly it's not 1987 anymore. It's a different time period. And I remember literally just stopping and rewinding it because it confused me. And I was like, oh no, that actually did happen. It sort of jumps around a bit. But I guess I thought more time travel.
It's quite similar to Ready Player One. Have you guys?
No, it's somehow like to read list. Like I've heard only good things about it.
Yeah, because it is quite similar to that, where the people are living sort of these lives basically throughout this augmented reality and presenting themselves as sort of like much younger, fitter, or different versions of themselves when they're actually just sat in a hut somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it did remind me of that quite a lot.
Did you like this episode? Like, out of all of them, how did you guys rate it?
Yeah, I think this was up there because it was so different, I think, because it was something that I didn't expect from Black Mirror at all. That's why it kind of affected me the most. Obviously, it was a nice sort of, it was a feel-good sort of episode, I guess, and also quite an interesting one in terms of what they did. I was quite confused, though. Do you think when you pass over into that augmented reality, like, are you gone? But this ghost of you exists. This kind of like.
Well, I mean, that's a big question, because I personally think that you would be gone, and it would be if they can basically clone your hard drive, your organic hard drive, into this other one. And I don't think it'd be really you. I just think it would be a clone of you.
There'd be no point, really.
Yeah. Come to think of it, like, there wouldn't really be any point. Like, once you're gone, you're gone.
Yeah.
Well, unless you're in there for other people to visit, or in there for other people to talk to still.
For other people, definitely. Actually, that does make sense.
The way they kind of presented it, though, was that once you pass over, it's almost like you are still aware. I kind of got that vibe. You're still aware of yourself, so essentially you're still alive. And obviously, it is a metaphor for heaven, wouldn't it? That's what I kind of...
Yeah, absolutely.
My favourite shot is right at the end when they're inside of... What did they call it? Just call it San Junipero, the system, I guess.
They're all
dancing to the lights of the music, and then it cuts to like a data bank, and it's just all of the little lights of the people.
It's
sort of the same music. It's a really nice shot. But this is basically one of Ray Kurzweil's, who's like a technology predictor person. It's a technical term. This is one of his predictions, that eventually we will just upload our brains to a big cloud storage system. And then we would just be looked after this is after the singularity. So this is after robots are taking over the world and maintaining it. And then we'll just live in this cloud system, and it will look, and we can live whatever life we want. This is the furthest reaching of all the episodes, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I think I'll still only get 5 gigabytes of hard drive.
Because it felt like, how far in the future would you say it was? It felt like it was maybe like 100 years, something like that.
Possibly. Well, going by Kurzweil's predictions, I'd say about 50 years.
50?
Yeah.
But I think that was one of the nice things was it is far-reaching technology, but they do it sort of set in the late 80s, so you've got that really kind of...
Yeah, that juxtaposition is really nice, yeah.
Yeah, and just how they executed sort of a late 80s bar and the whole vibe of people dancing and what the atmosphere was like, I thought they did a fantastic job at sort of recreating that era that obviously I lived in at some point, didn't. But you know what I mean? Like, it felt like really high quality. Like they put in a lot of effort to make everything as authentic as it could be.
Yeah, it was really good. And I like the idea... Like, you could tell some... The thing is, a lot of these Black Mirror episodes, they introduce worlds where I feel like there could be a lot more story told. So I like... You know, there's that other bar that's, like, on the outskirts where people... The ghosts who have gone a bit more depraved, they just go and sort of live out these sort of sexual fantasies and stuff. I feel like it could be more, like, of a darker side of it as well, but he just didn't take that turn in this episode.
Yeah. I didn't buy into, really, the... when they argue sort of later on, I didn't feel like the motive for Kelly arguing with Yorkie was enough. It was like, oh, my husband, I had to watch him go, he didn't get to go here. Yeah, but she's just saying, you know, join me, have some fun.
Yeah, it kind of felt like it should have ended around about there, really, didn't it? Like it didn't need that extra bit of drama, I don't think.
Maybe that's just because that whole drama, romance drama, is not really my thing. I mean, I guess I prefer the sort of the darker, not action episodes, but the ones that sort of have a constant flow going forward. It's less of an emotional journey.
Yeah. In terms of actually leaking information and driving the story forward, though, I thought it was fantastic. Like I say, at one point I had to rewind it, and I feel like that wasn't a bad thing. That was because they did their job well. There was like a sneaky snippet where something was changing. Yeah. And then they introduced that whole thing of not feeling pain. And they're on top of the roof and they talk about like jumpers or something. And then I was a bit like, at that point, I was like, something's happening here that is throwing me off of whack. So it was really nice drip feeding before it actually revealed what was going on.
I think that's what they do really well in the entire series, like just drip feed information throughout the episodes because there's like very little exposition. It never feels exposition heavy anyway.
Yeah.
No, it never does.
No one sits there and goes, well, this is San Junipero, a place where people who are old go to feel young again.
Okay, so this is the longest episode. We might have split this episode into two episodes, by the way, because we've still got a bit more to talk about, like over the hour. But episode 5, Men Against Fire. A military organization is battling a threat referred to as roaches, mutated leftovers of a biological weapon from an unspecified war. Stripe and Rayman are part of a squad who use an implant called MASS to help with strategic operations. So they're going around. They're basically gamified a way to go around and kill these monsters. And then we sort of find out that the monsters aren't really monsters. They're just people who have genetic, not even genetic disorders, but just sort of...
They're not as pure. They're not as, it's like a whole Aryan thing, isn't it? They're breeding out the weak.
How do you guys feel about this episode in general?
I feel like it was, out of all of them, I felt like it was the weakest one. I'm not 100% sure why. I think it was more so the fact that, for me, it was, I wouldn't say completely predictable. It was good in itself, but I kind of predicted what was going on quite early. And it was just, I guess, a lot more of an obvious narrative than the others.
Yeah, I think the concept's quite strong, but the actual story was, I don't know, it's just... Didn't have the emotional climax that I kind of would expect in the Black Mirror episodes, but I think they missed a trick. They should have told. If it was me, I would have split the point of views in two. I would have told a story from one of the roaches' perspectives, but not have them live out somewhere in the wild, wherever they are, and then have them talk about a threat that you presume is the roaches, but then you actually find out that it's the military. People and have the same thing sort of happen vice versa.
Maybe Charlie Brooker will listen to this and then hire you.
Maybe.
I think that would work a lot better because it is very much like, it's like the guy that plays the main character is a fantastic actor. Well, they all are, but Yeah, I think it would have been stronger having those sort of two elements, because it was only once he actually crossed and saw those other people, sort of the woman and the child, that I felt connected with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it was another metaphor, wasn't it? It was a metaphor for immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
Thinking this, something like that.
Pretty relevant, I think, this one.
Yeah. It was relevant, but also feel like it took some elements from the previous episodes and kind of like put it front and center.
In terms of the,
I feel like VR and sort of augmented reality really have had an effect on these episodes, haven't they? Rather than the previous ones. I know we've had sort of like similar stuff, but this one's like probably like three episodes now with some sort of.
I feel like in the first couple of seasons, the episodes were completely separate from each other. But this one, this season, it seems like they're building a universe, because like the technologies are quite prevalent throughout them. Like I know he goes back to like the eye camera thing quite a lot, and some of the AR stuff, but it was good. I don't know, quite like the ending where what's his name from House of Cards is like torturing him.
That was cruel. I felt for him there, but I also felt that the ending just in general was unsatisfying. I don't know why. I felt like I needed more rather than just him resetting and yielding. I kind of wanted it to feel like there was something more.
Yeah, I don't know what could you. I don't know what you could put on the end there though. Unless he kills himself or something. I don't know.
Wanted him to get some sort of, I don't know, do the right thing or get some sort of revenge for the roaches, but
stab out his eyes. Just, I'm obsessed with eyes this episode for some reason.
Stab out the eyes.
Yeah, I think for me this is the weakest episode, but it's still good. I still
maybe that's it. Why they put it one before the last one.
Yeah,
maybe they knew. Yeah. So the last one is The Hated in the Nation. This is like a feature length film length. DCI Karen Park has been summoned to a hearing to discuss her involvement in a case on May 15th of the previous year. Journalist Joe Powers is found dead at home with a throat cut. Powers had recently been subjected to online death threats after she published a column critical of disabled activist suicide. Karen investigates Powers' death and meets up with a new partner, Blue, who is transferred from a cyber forensics department due to being changed by a child kidnapping case she solved. It's a long episode. It's about There's so many elements to this episode, but I mean it's basically about like social media hate and like rage porn, and when I say rage porn, I mean people just jumping on a bandwagon and get angry and throwing death threats at people they have no intention of actually hurting.
I think it's just like the ease of Twitter and being able to like talk to someone directly, to like a celebrity or just like the president. Yeah, you could just tell him to fuck off.
Yeah.
I mean, when have we had that? The ability to do that, really?
Yeah. Like the whole social media shaming thing is pretty dark. I mean, I can't imagine how many people have committed suicide because of like online bullying and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's gotta be loads, isn't it?
So I mean, I actually kind of agree with the the guy's motives. Maybe I wouldn't do the same thing as what he did. But I think he's coming from a sort of correct place.
I think it highlights as well how quickly people do jump on bandwagons, because even obviously despite them discovering and the nation realizing that hashtag death 2 kills people, they kind of still absolve blame and just go, well, I've done it because thousands of other people are doing it. So what difference does it make? Someone's going to die.
And it's interesting to think that people eventually were held accountable for something they probably didn't even give that much thought at the time.
Yeah.
Even when it was obvious that this hashtag was actually killing people, you know, people were still doing it, probably even more.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, this is probably the only episode that has like a actual sort of moral lesson in it, I think. Like, be more responsible with what you're saying online. But I actually thought this episode shouldn't have just been one episode. I feel like these characters could go on and do a whole season of
that could be a whole show in itself.
Definitely. It felt a little bit like Luther in terms of like the
sort of
it was in London, wasn't it? It was set in London.
Yeah, I think so.
Sort of like London set sort of crime
procedural
drama.
With like a near future twist on it. I really like it.
I also love that whole power hungry. In essence, side of is it that the mayor gets targeted, And when he's targeted, that's when he's just like, I don't care about anyone else. Just, you know, change it. Just fix it. Just make it so that something else happens.
Yeah.
But obviously, it is the public actually being democratic in a way.
Yeah. It's cool to see Benedict Wong in something again as well. I really like Benedict Wong.
Was he the agent guy that was sort of on their back?
I think he's Chinese.
The guy that presses the button in the end.
Yeah.
He fucks it all up, doesn't he? Yeah, he's had a beast.
Yeah.
He is ruined.
I really like the two main characters. I feel like it's just a really smart decision having two pretty strong female characters. They're not overly heroic or anything like that. They're just real people. They just seem like really cool characters. I'd love to see more of them.
Because I wasn't so sure about Kelly. Is it Kelly MacDonald, the main character? The one
from Trainspotting?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure so.
I love them. Go on.
I wasn't so sure about her to start with, but then I think she kind of seemed like much more interesting character as time drew on. And her sort of partner as well.
Yeah, the beginning part where she's kind of in court and then how that comes around again to she's in court and the rest of it happens. I felt like that was a bit of a slow burner. But with Faye Marzi's character, I thought that I loved everything she did, but she was also the convenience.
Mm.
It was just like, oh, I found this. Oh, I've also found this. So I guess you get a lot of that in.
She's good at her job.
Yeah.
You should be applauding her.
I also love the whole premise of artificial bees.
I imagine that might something similar to that may happen at some point. But again, it's just a great episode. I think it's the best way to end the season.
Mm. When the artificial bees were introduced, sort of like in the opening minutes, did you think that they were going to be a major part of the story?
Somebody had tweeted something about the bees, so I sort of had an inkling that they were going to be a pretty big part. And then when Thingy died,
the bees,
yeah. It's sort of new, but I mean, it's just a good episode. I think the motives of the villain was like spot on, sort of understandable in a way, and just a great story, just a fully well told story.
Do you feel like you came? Did you come away from the episode being more scared of bees or less scared of bees?
I like bees. I'm a big bee fan.
I like bees.
Yeah,
I'm more of a wasp guy.
No, not a wasp guy.
See if you guys can. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you a part of a film now, and you try and tell me what film it is, because it's been in my head for years, and I don't know why I've never actually tried to hunt it down. In a film, there are like bees or wasps trying to get into a house, and some guy like runs a bath, gets in the bath, and he's got like a tube so he can breathe, and they can't like get to him because they're in the water. But I think one goes down the tube.
I've seen a film about killer bees before. It may be that one, but they're in a house and trying to get away.
Yeah, and the bees,
house. Yeah, I think it must be the same film. It must be just be Attack of the Killer Bees or something like that.
I'm gonna have to Google this. I think I saw it as a kid, and I was just like, it's always kind of like stuck with me. This in a bath with all these bees trying to get you.
It's weird those films that stick with you. There's one film that I always think about. It's like Attack of the Killer Clowns or something. And like I remember my dad watching it, and I was like really young watching it. And they're like shooting, the clowns are shooting people with like rice guns or something. And I just remember like, I don't know if I dreamt it, but it was like they were like shooting people with like Rice Krispies. Maybe this doesn't exist, I don't know.
I did have something similar to that as well when I was a kid. My dad was watching a film and it's called The Unnamable. And I think it was like a H.P. Lovecraft monster film.
Yeah.
And in my head, I remembered it quite vividly. It was quite horrific, sort of like a weird female demon thing with horrible wings, and she used to like rip people apart and stuff. And I found it like on DVD in some shop like a few years ago, and I bought it, and it is absolutely terrible. It's the worst. It's like the worst film ever. I'm like, how did this ever scare me? It's just so ridiculous.
There was a similar one for me. My dad was watching, I can't remember what it is. It's a Stephen King story, I believe, and then the main demon guy is Billy Zane, and they're like in a house, they're trying to get away from him, and he's got these like demon buddies and stuff. I remember watching it from behind the sofa. My dad was watching it, and I had nightmares for weeks from that film. But I'm sure if I watched it now, it'd probably be pretty terrible. But
see, I'm a different caliber. I remember my first proper nightmares came from watching one of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror with Mr. Burns as a vampire.
Oh my god.
Literally, like, I must have watched that when I was about 6 or 7, and for weeks I could not sleep.
Simpson, eh? Are you scared of the bit where he goes down the stairs and then he can't help himself, he has to turn it into a slide, and he slides down and they're at the bottom. Yeah, it's a good episode. I like that episode.
Yeah, that one. I'm fine with it now, but at the time as a kid, that just got me. I don't know.
I remember being a bit freaked out by Mr. Burns when they thought he was an alien, but he was just like dosed up on. He was just dosed up on something, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
Giant
eyeballs. Yeah, he comes out of the woods. He's just like,
woo. And everyone's like, it's an alien. Oh my God. We come in peace. And he's just like, he's actually just been dosed up on something. And the reason he's glowing is just like some sort of radioactive material stopping him aging.
Was that the same one where he finds out he's immortal because he has every known virus and they're all blocking each other from doing their job?
That's amazing.
Possibly.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, so. Let's quickly rank up the episodes. What's your favourite episode?
2, the augmented reality.
I think I'll agree. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I did like that one. I think my favourite one probably is San Junipero, though, just because for me, it felt like it was just so different that it felt everything like a Black Mirror episode, but also nothing like one.
Yeah.
And I think it was the one that stuck with me the most. I think I would always judge the episodes of Black Mirror by how long they stick with me and how much I really sort of give them thought. And I think probably every other episode, I kind of didn't take that much away from it.
Yeah.
With San Junipero, I think I did. So
it's interesting. I think the episode 2, the playtest episode, for me is the perfect example of what I think Black Mirror should be. And San Junipero is not. It's like the complete opposite, but it's still pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But I'd probably say. Maybe I think San Junipero might be like my second favorite on there. Yeah,
my second will be Shut Up and Dance.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah. I think I'll go for Shut Up and Dance for my second as well.
I don't know how easy it's going to be to do. So, what about your third favorite episodes?
Third, possibly Hated in the Nation.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Hated in the Nation was next.
I think mine might be Nosedive.
Yeah.
Because that was probably a little bit because it was my introduction into it, but also because, it was just beautifully filmed.
Yeah, it's a good episode. I think mine would be Shut Up and Dance. And then, what about 4? What are you guys thinking for that?
Yeah, probably Playtest for me. That's what it's called, wasn't it, Playtest?
Yeah.
Yeah, because as you said, it was like the quintessential Black Mirror episode, wasn't it? It was the one. And it's also probably, when I've been talking about this new series, it's probably the one I've told people about the most because it's the one you can kind of like talk about without necessarily having to spoil too much.
Yeah.
It's like this is essentially the premise of it, and this is and a lot of freaky shit happens.
I think mine's San Junipero.
Cool. Nosedive for me, I think. And then we've got like the last 2, so 5 and 6. I'm trying to remember. Okay, I know which ones I've got. Yeah, I know.
Hate by the Nation is my 5.
Yeah, mine too.
I thought it was fantastic, but I also thought that the others sort of overshadowed it.
I'll probably go for Nosedive as my number 5, I think.
And then Men Against Fire at the last one.
Men Against Fire.
Yeah.
I do like Men Against Fire. It's not that,
yeah, it's not that they're bad episodes, yeah.
No, I just think it's, for me, like the first half of the episode felt really good and it kind of just sort of trails off.
Yeah.
Even with that twist that comes in that sort of tells you who the roaches really are. I would like to find out a little bit more about that world as well, sort of what's happened. And
I think that might be, it's very self-contained, isn't it? It very much revolves around him, the girl, and then the boss. Yeah.
And did it really explain why these people were being thought of as roaches, but then you also had like another community that was like living out in the sticks and they weren't roaches? Because they never really mentioned, when they were talking about the roaches, they never really mentioned that they were just other people. They kind of just went...
Yeah.
They spoke about the roaches. That felt like that was there to really cement the idea in the audience of these roaches are like monsters or something.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, then it's a good episode, but it didn't quite live up to the standard of the others, I think. Yeah, so this is the... That's all the episodes, I'm afraid. I feel like we finally got Black Mirror out of our system. Maybe.
What? Never talk of it again.
Let's talk about the Christmas special on the next episode.
There's a Christmas special?
Oh, have you not seen it?
No.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
It was last Christmas.
I thought it was a new one.
Had Rafe Spall and John Hamm. I wonder if they're doing another one this year.
Yeah, that'd probably be good. The Christmas special is crazy.
Yeah, I like that. It was a good episode.
There's a reveal in the Christmas special where I was just like, holy shit! Holy shit!
That whole like internet dating style one where it's like the six guys watching him and sort of coaching him through the thing and then the date kills him. It's pretty horrific.
Unlucky.
Yeah. Cool. Let's wrap up then because this has been a long episode. Thanks for listening. If you like Black Mirror, let us know which one you liked and which one you didn't. Why? And go to www.hawkandcleaver.com.
Yes. Oh.
Hi, Kat.
This is a... just give you a quick... so my cat just got in the way there. Just the people. cool, okay. Anyone want to send anyone anywhere?
Find me on all social media channels at Wilcox Author, all one word.
Luke of Condor. And Ben?
Ben_Errington. Everywhere.
Nice one. I'm going to start.
Welcome to the Story Studio.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know? Every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle-pip.